Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Please delete as appropriate. Hello there, and welcome to this episode number 460 of the Material Podcast. I am Andy Anatko, and with us is Florence Ion. Flo, how does it go?
How does it go, Andy? Hey, I was thinking about you this weekend, by the way, because I went and I bought a bunch of physical media.
Yay.
Yes. I bought a bunch of physical media. I went to a thrift store on Saturday. I brought a coupon, so I got 20% off the whole thing.
Lovely.
I wasn't prepared to buy that much physical media, but my husband found three separate Mary-Kate and Ashley VHS tapes. And those women who are, they're my age, they're born a week after me, or 2 weeks after me, they no longer stream those classics.
Okay. No.
Because, you know, they don't want any more evidence of that. They want to move on for that. Fine.
Just
fine.
Not unlike the missing reel of the Magnificent Ambersons.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a shame. It's lost media.
Exactly. So then I went to the salon on Sunday, and I told my hairstylist, I was like, yeah, you know, we bought a bunch of VHS tapes and DVDs, and we're going to rip them and put them on our Plex, our family media server. And she just looks at me and she's like, that is the nerdiest thing I have ever heard. It's like, you know what? This is what it's come to. This is my level of protest against the capitalizing of media that we used to quote unquote own.
Yep.
That we no longer own.
Nope.
Well,
I'm totally with you. I think I've talked about this on the show before. About again, I actually today did another check, and I've got like 12,000 tracks ripped to my Plex server, to my media library. And it's timely you bring this up, because like, okay, it's a long story. I will try to shorten it a bit. I will say that it involves an existential crisis where have you ever done something where you started asking yourself questions just innocently, and then you asked yourself, it turns out, way too many questions about like long standing beliefs and practices. And now you're just not 100% sure that this all isn't some sort of simulation.
Andy, I just got out of a hole. Please don't make me go down another one.
Yeah.
Please.
This is a simpler one. Okay. Let me tell you the story. So going out for my walk today, mm-hmm. Got my Pixel Buds A, still my favorite earbuds. I've got my Walkman A55, which is sort of like a digital iPod. It's like half the size of a normal phone. I love it because it has an SD slot, so I can have all 12,000 of my songs like on this device at the same time. So anything I want from my entire library, and I just ripped a whole bunch of new CDs from the library media sale from thrift store. So I had some new albums I wanted to check out. Okay. However, now here's how. If I had known that here's door A in which you're fine, door B in which again you have an existential crisis in which you question everything that you thought and held dear, like you would know which door to go through. It starts with these simple things where I don't know why, or maybe I just didn't notice, but for some reason I can't use the Walkman to adjust the volume on my Pixel A earbuds. Okay, and it's just a little bit too
annoying.
Loud. Yeah, it's also like damaging my hearing and my one remaining good ear.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know what? I don't know why this happened. I want to take my walk. So it's like, okay, you know what? I'll put down my Walkman and I'll take my phone. I'll listen to music on my phone. One of the things that I do, like after I rip a whole bunch of new stuff to my Plex server, is that there is my Plex server has, again, everything that I've got. The only things that I keep locally on my phone are like a small collection of albums that I have uploaded in totality to Google Drive. And there's a sync app that I installed on my phone that keeps a local folder on my phone synced to this folder in Google Drive. Because obviously, okay. I think I've got 512 gigabytes of storage. I certainly don't have enough of it to keep my entire, not my entire library, nor would it be important to do so. So I don't. Okay. So here's step two. So I start my walk. I launch Rocket Player. Okay. And I decide, you know what, instead of, you know, why have I never done this thing on my phone that I always do on the Walkman? One of the reasons why it's such a nice thing to have my entire library on my Walkman is that I will put the entire library on shuffle. And so it will pluck out a track I can't even remember from an album that I got 10 years ago and I forgot I had, but it's an incredibly cool track. And I can then like add it to one of my three playlists that I use for everything. There's like, I've got three main playlists: Pulse Rate Up, Pulse Rate Neutral, Pulse Rate Down. Okay. Oh. Which handles pretty much everything that I want. Okay.
Yeah.
So, wow. Oh, wow. I didn't even know I had this song. Great. I'll add this to, let's see. It's a kind of a upbeat. So up tempo. Okay, great. Pulse Rate Up. Okay. So I was like, wow, I should do that. And then, so I did that. So, you know what? I should now create local versions of, I can't, I'll have like a Pulse Rate Up, Pulse Rate Neutral, Pulse Rate Down, new playlist just for the phone. Great. And I was having so much fun doing this that when I got back from my walk, I decided, hey, I'm going to keep like listening to my phone stuff. However, Rocket Player has never worked with Google Cast. I don't know why. It's a feature. It has the Google Cast button. Okay. However, every single time I tap that button to activate it, it thinks it's connected to the speaker I've selected, but it is the only part of this entire chain that thinks it's connected to the speaker. The speaker says, nope, nothing's connected to me. Google Home says, nope, no, nothing's connected to the speaker. Every other Google Cast app on my phone works fine. So I'm trying to get into a new mode where, look, rather than simply cursing something for not working, maybe you should look into why it's not working and try to fix it before you forget about it. Go into the Rocket Player's like website, and I got turned off because I look in the facts, the frequently asked questions. It only has like maybe 18 questions and answers on them. One of them is still, I'm having problems getting playback on my Samsung Galaxy S3. And I immediately, it's like being in a restaurant that you like, but then you see something on the floor that makes you suddenly think that I should find a new place to eat. That was my experience finding that they've got a, and they keep updating the app, but why is there, why? So, okay, next step is go into Google Play, try to find a new music player. And there's like a million like local music player apps. Most of them look like garbage. I don't have time this afternoon to go through and like...
You could have just asked me. I've written about this before. I could have told you.
Okay. I will definitely look at that. But let's keep on track for my crisis here.
All right.
Okay. I check out VLC, which is already on my phone. It works. I managed to reconfigure it so that it actually looks like more like a music player than a video player. It does have Google Cast support. However, for some stupid reason, even though it explicitly can handle like music playlists, it cannot Google Cast to anything other than a smart display or any Google Cast target that doesn't have video. It can't work with it. Ooh. Okay. So at this point, I'm about to not necessarily give up, but realize that, okay, I've already spent way too much time on this than I want to. I need to get on with my work. So I'll table this for later. Then I quickly think, oh, geez, maybe I could. Now, I use Plex. Plex has a really wonderful app for music called Plex Amp. It's an Android and iOS app. It was a really flawless, you can tell it was done by someone who's just a fan of Plex and not done in-house because it works so well and so flawlessly. It works so well, as a matter of fact, that Plex like bought it and hired the guy who did it to make it an in-house like free part of Plex. Now here's where the doom started happening. Uh-oh. I realized that, yeah, you know what? Okay, this player works really, really well. Then I realized that, oh, well, that will also kind of simplify the idea of taking these like few selected albums and like moving them onto the phone, because now instead of copying them onto Google Drive and having Google Drive with a separate app sync it down to my phone, I can just simply open Plex Amp, which is always open to like my music on my Plex server, and just simply long press on these albums I want to download. Okay. And yeah, okay, and Google Cast works fine. Okay, that's great. But I kept thinking, okay, this is my problem. I kept thinking. And here's what I realized, that if I continue with this original plan, of saying, I'm just going to have like phone playlists, phone versions of these three main playlists on this phone that just relate to albums that I've downloaded like onto the phone from Plex. Because it's Plex, these three playlists will also sync to the server. And it means that I can have these versions of these playlists available from my living room, nice stereo, from my computers, from my tablets, everything. And this would solve a lot of problems that, wow, it would even be worthwhile to reconstruct the main versions of these three playlists on from my Walkman. They're like open, like MP3 playlist files. They're not MP3s, but like, you know, MU3 or whatever playlist form. I could reconstruct them. It would take an afternoon to do that, but then I would have that. Then I realized that, yes, but the reason why we don't sync the entire music library onto the phone is because we don't have space for it. Mm-hmm. However, if we stopped using the Walkman as our home for these three playlists and decided that the proper home for it was my Plex server, then that would mean I could simply tell PlexAmp that I want these playlists synced to this device. Every time I add a song to this playlist, I want to make sure you download it and keep it on this phone. And now my Walkman, which I love, I think it's wonderful. I think it's very, very fun.
And stylish.
And I like it so much that I was actually semi-budgeting this year to say, now that I've had this for like 4 years, I've demonstrated that, yes, I have a space for this in my life. I'd like to upgrade to the Sony A306, which actually runs Android. It's like it runs Android 11 or some other like similar sized but much more powerful pocket players. I have backed myself into a corner where I can take this device that I love. I'm holding it up to the camera so you can see it right now. It's got this little case with a magnetic lid on it.
Look at that.
And the leather on it is slightly worn. So if this is stolen from me, someone will know that, oh, I feel bad. He clearly loved and used this every single day. I wonder if there's a way that I can just get it to him. He can have his bike back. He can have his backpack back. I'll keep the bike. I'll keep the laptop. I'll keep the bike, but I'll send him this back because he clearly loves it. So that's where I'm in a crisis right now. I have accidentally solved a bunch of pressing problems, but in doing so, put myself in a position where I kind of have to fire one of the most valued parts of my organization, and I don't know if I like what that says about me. Okay, thank you. I needed to unload. If you may now react, listeners, I hope that was worth it. It was very much a cleansing thing for me. I needed to say that to another human being. Unfortunately, Flo and all of you are it.
Would you like to know the app that I suggest?
Oh yes, absolutely.
By the way. It's called Pulsar Music Player Pro. And if you have Google Play Pass, it's free. Well, not free. It's included in your Play Pass.
I'm opening it right now. Okay. I like the Google. Okay. I'm not complaining. This is, again, first impressions. This is illustrative.
Tell me.
If you've got an app on the Play Store or on the App Store in Apple, you gotta keep those screenshots, those screen images updated. This is a Samsung Galaxy. The screenshots are set inside like Samsung Galaxy S3. That makes me think I think it was Gordon Ramsay who said, that might have been somebody else, but when he goes into a restaurant, the first take he gets is he goes right to the bathroom. If the bathroom isn't clean, how should I trust that they can keep something way more complicated? Like foods. So it's like, it's so easy to just like even take the same screenshots and put them inside a modern
phone. This is a tried and true taco place. It has not updated its photos since it opened in the 90s. I'm sorry, but the food is still the exact same as when it opened 30 years ago. I like this app because, I mean, yes, it's a little dated, okay, but they don't share data with third parties. They update frequently and the ad-free version is available with the Play Pass. So, and you know, I'm going to be honest that I just try to look for reasons to justify my Play Pass by finding apps that are unlocked by it. So that's why I'm suggesting it. I'm sure there's a better music player out there.
Okay.
And I'm actually very curious, dear listeners, if you have a suggestion, Threads or Blue Sky, me and Andy, let us know.
Oh my God, I can't believe that you brought that up, because I realized that I've been ignoring Blue Sky. It's probably a Twitter. I am almost 100% off of Twitter. The only time I ever hit Twitter is to just check to see if somebody has added me to ask me a question, yeah. In which case I will answer the question, no problem. And maybe if there's something that I, once a month, just to make sure that people know that, yes, I'm still checking this, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay. But now I'm realizing that I like Threads because, like, I get a lot of engagement on it. I don't monetize it at all, but it's nice. But it's nice to know that if I spent 10 minutes trying to craft like three sentences or a photo, well, it's nice to know that somebody is taking a look at it. Blue Sky, however, that's where all my friends are. That's where my group is. So it is kind of like the close personal friends of Andy and Otko Discord. So I'm sorry.
What I meant is that.
So only in the past like 4 or 5 days have I been trying to program myself. If you post something to Threads, go onto Blue Sky and try to, if it's worthwhile, also put it on Blue Sky, because you like sharing your workday with other self-employed mm-hmm. creative friends who are on Blue Sky, because they too are having such an unproductive workday that they're down to social media and cleaning the gaps between the keyboard keys, because nothing, God knows you can't do anything else with this keyboard today.
Oh boy. For those listening, I would like to remind you that we actually do have bonus content for our members only, because what I was about to do is I was about to launch into something that I need to save for our members only episode. So members, stay tuned. Those who are not members, you can go to relay.fm/material to find out how to become a member
yes.
of our podcast network, so that you can unlock those special conversations that Andy and I have after we finish the whole show.
Indeed. And you also get access to all the bonus content from all the other Relay FM mm-hmm. podcasts. And those are, I've been listening to a lot of other people's bonus content, and it really is like it is. Have you ever seen a show where, like, over the end credits, they just, like, the camera just falls around the guests as they're just taking off their mics and talking? That's what almost every, nobody says, hey, and now we've got our special, our weekly bonus episode is, as you know, is always a cooking demonstration using cilantro. It's like, no, it's like, oh God. Okay. I'm glad. yeah. So yes, relay.fm/material. We appreciate all of our listeners. We know that your investment of time is the most valuable thing that you invest, and we hope we don't waste it. The members who also are free with their money are also very, very much appreciated, because again, ads are in kind of in a stinky sort of place right now. But let's go past that. We actually have a pretty fun show today. We have some legitimate business news that I know that's a downer, okay. But a lot of the reason why I've got this business news is because it does allow us to quote RuPaul at
taking
least twice.
Care of business.
Exactly. speaking personally,
wait, I thought it was You Better Work.
CoverGirl. I respect RuPaul. I like RuPaul. I'm glad for everything that RuPaul does for, I'm not being sarcastic, for I don't watch Drag Race, probably because I just don't know what channel it's on and also that sort of stuff. But so
it's
no,
I, Lifetime, but yeah.
All I know is the song that he broke with. So anyway,
yes.
Now I'm paranoid about certain things regarding the government. So I'm excited about a couple of new features okay. in the Android 15 beta. We will get into that. Also, the fighting and a Google international war has come to the shores of the U.S. Ooh, I'm sorry to say.
A little too. That's.
Well, you know, we can't flinch
grab
from
your
the heart.
Comfort we for can't. This episode.
In a week when digital tech journalism are being attacked on all sides, I think we have to still keep our heads down and do our jobs. But we're going to do our jobs right after this break. Well, Flo, we have some great, 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 great news to report out of Mountain View today. I almost don't know where to start with all this. Okay, well, Google continues to responsibly invest in its biggest priorities and in the significant opportunities it has ahead. Not only that, but a number of teams inside Google are making changes to become more efficient and work better and remove layers and to align their resources to their biggest product priorities. I mean, like, Google, as I sound like I'm being a fanboy here, but I can't be objective. Google is on such a roll, in fact, that they are simplifying their structures. I know, And that means, you know what that means? It means that
in this economy,
I know. And so are they going to do it to feather their own nest? No, it means that they can give their employees more opportunities to work on Google's most innovative and important advances and the biggest priorities of the company. And
the irony of you saying all this, by the way, after a bunch of Google employees got put on leave for protesting the other day. I'm sorry. It's been a week.
That's fine.
It's been a week at Google. I'm sorry.
Well, I was building up to a joke here, Rusty.
I just ruined everything with my politics.
What I'm doing here is like I'm actually quoting a memo that Google's chief finance officer sent out to everybody, announcing a whole bunch of like layoffs and like changes, and some people are going to be losing their jobs, other people are going to be offered a chance to relocate, but it's going to be extremely disruptive. Even though Sundar Pichai did say that there was going to be more layoffs coming in 2024. That can't have blunted the shock that I'm sure that a lot of Google employees are feeling today. And by the way, all of that and another two paragraphs that I did have in the show notes, those are almost all direct quotes from the memo. But yeah, it's I hope that didn't come across as glib, but I could not. It's like every single time I've not been in an office environment since A. Bush was in office. Okay. However, I would like to think that there's a reason why when a doctor has to give you like bad test results, every bit of coaching that they get in med school is be quick, be immediate, say it, get it out there. Don't like try to sugarcoat it. Don't try to. So I would like to people to think that, you know, we are refocusing. We've had to like make a lot of adjustments over the past couple of years. Unfortunately, that's going to include right now another round of layoffs, but they are specific. They're not company wide, and they are designed as opposed to this memo essentially saying, isn't it great? We're refocusing on priorities. You are going to have so many fewer layers and so much streamlined bureaucracy now. You are not going to know what to do with all of it. Like, no, it's not good news, but, So CNBC and, of course, everybody else got a copy of the memo, and they're talking a lot about it. The CFO, Ruth Porat, who's announced her retirement, but she's still sticking around, apparently, until either she gets her entire agenda, like, crossed off, or until they find someone who can do her job, which is not going to be easy, because when you, as far as superstar C-suite executives go, particularly for Google, Ruth Porat is pretty high up there. So in addition to the layoffs, in addition to some workers being moved to other parts of the country, she announced that Google plans to establish operational hubs for its finance teams. I should have mentioned that most of this stuff seems to be affecting just jobs in finance. So it's not focusing on engineers, not focusing on marketing, not focusing on like plant operations, stuff like that. It really is finance. So they're establishing new hubs for their finance teams in Bangalore, Mexico City, Dublin, Chicago, and Atlanta. Of course, the mothership for all these operations will remain in Mountain View. There is also, I had to circle this because she referred to people who are working in finance departments in Google by apparently the insider term for them inside on the campus, which is finuglers. Finuglers. F-I-N apostrophe.
It comes from fintech.
Yeah, I get the fin part, but it sounds very Irish. Or no, it sounds like somebody, like an institution that is not Irish, trying to market a green-dyed product for, hey, this week Dow Chemical is Dow O Chemical with our new Shamrock flavored dioxins and dioxin delivered derivatives coming to a water supply near you, top of the morning to you. There's no mention or speculation about the scale of the cuts from CNBC or anybody else. Some finuglers are receiving layoff notices, while again others are getting offers to relocate to other offices.
Fun.
Yeah, it's sad, and I don't mean that in a glib way. It's a terrible spot to be in. Speaking as someone in journalism, to know that, okay, well, the axe is above our group, it's going to fall, and I don't know if I'm going to be one of the people that it hits. So even if you feel as though your job is secure, you just, when the downside of the C-suite being open about future directions is saying, look, there are going to be, we think that this 12,000 people we let go earlier this year were the bulk of what we're doing, but we're still going to find places to essentially refocus as the time goes on. That's a good solution to the problem of productivity, because God knows you're not going to be productive under those sort of things. We also got a little tidbit that kind of shows us why Google is making so many of these cuts. AI is, of course, the reason for Google's ongoing restructuring. We got a chilling peek into how expensive this AI arms race between Google and OpenAI/Microsoft is. So Demis Hassabis, the CEO of Google DeepMind, essentially the head of Google's AI operations, spoke at the annual TED conference in Vancouver this week, which generally a place where very, very wealthy and powerful people get to talk to audiences of other very wealthy and powerful people who spent $6,000 to $8,000 for a ticket to sit and watch, again, mostly very correct. Powerful people.
Vancouver is very wealthy people in Canada.
Yeah, and this is not TEDx. This is like where you do get local operations where just people who got free tickets. I've been to a couple of TEDx's. They're really wonderful. So he was on stage for a conversation with Chris Anderson, who is the owner/curator of the TED conference, or the head of the organization that puts it on. He bought the TED conference a number of years ago and basically quit all of his other like corporate work to just do this. It's irrelevant to the story. We will get back to it, but I wanted to mention anyway, one of Demis Hassabis's fellow speakers on Monday was in fact RuPaul. We will circle back to this anyway, but Hassabis was asked for a reaction to a bit of news that came out of Microsoft and OpenAI last month. It came out that Microsoft and OpenAI were building an AI mega weapon, or in less dramatic terms, a supercomputer, but it is a mega weapon in this fight. It's called Stargate, which is not intimidating or suspicious at all. And it would cost the company about $100 billion with a B. So he was asked, well, what's Google doing? Like in response, what do you think about this? What's Google doing? This kind of similar. And obviously, Hassabis wouldn't say how much Google DeepMind was spending on AI compute power, but he did say, quote, I think we're investing more than that over time. So, wow, that is, okay, keeping in context that Google is like a well over $1 trillion company, still $100 billion spent on developing AI. That shows like how high the stakes are. Then he said that he thinks that Google and DeepMind have more computational firepower than OpenAI and Microsoft, and went further into and said that that's why, like in 2014, when a lot of companies wanted to buy DeepMind and have their team join theirs, that's why he picked Google, because he thought that, well, Google, we're going to need a lot of computational power. Google is the one company that is able to provide it, so that's why we're going for it. On the one hand, I know that we never know the final bill for some of the greatest technologies that we use and rely on, even the more important technologies that we never hear about that keep our infrastructure together. But it's still kind of staggering to like see a number like that. And it does, in that context, it does seem similar to like the actual arms race, because it's not just about having the best weapons, but also maintaining the public image of having weapons that are as good as your enemy, if not way better. Also, given the context of our previous story, as with the real life arms race, it might seem as though Google is spending so much money on its military budget that human services get short shrift. There, I said it. Political statement for the day.
That's a lot, Andy. That was a lot for me to take in. Yeah. The metaphors is kind of a lot, especially because of stuff that has been going on this week. It's been it's very difficult to be excited about any of this news, knowing what I'm reading in other parts of the newspaper. Let's just put it that way. I don't know if I'm a happy Googler right now. I don't know if I'm a happy customer right now.
Yeah.
And like hearing the stuff, it's like, okay, cool, AI, whatever. But you know what? Story is really resonating with people this week. I wrote about how to revert back from Google Gemini to the Google Assistant.
Good.
And like one of the comments is like, thank you so much for writing this, because people are like, what just happened? I didn't ask for this. This was just forced upon me as a user. And, you know, like, of course they go to these conferences and they're like, hey, rich people, all the money that we're spending on this stuff, like, we're making sure that you get your investments back. Okay, fine. What about me, the user at the end, who's sitting here very confused where my phone is and not able to set a simple timer because I'm just not using the right digital assistant, because one of them I have to like train somehow. I don't even know what the heck is going on. And then I'm still, it's been hard. This was a hard week with all the,
It was hard. It's hard. There are actually a couple of interesting stories about Google and geopolitical things that I bookmarked for my own edification and maybe writing about someplace else, but it's like, I don't want to talk about this.
No, I don't want to talk about it either, but I want to mention it because I feel like I can't ignore it.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm sorry.
No,
exactly. And also I'm going to be looking at Google I/O from this lens. So I might as well just say it. Like, this is what I'm going to be thinking about when I go and I sit at the keynote in Mountain View. That's what I'm going to be thinking about too, all the people that are losing their jobs because of this restructuring and just the changing atmosphere of the, just like the employee pool. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's
all of Silicon Valley. One of the stories that AI and whatever is the latest thing being hyped has a way of sucking the air out of the room for other conversations that are perennial, such as Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Oracle, everybody. How are they getting on with equality and hiring and promotion and opportunity, which was a big thing that that they were talking about in their keynotes like 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. But now we seem to be letting them off the hook about that. How are they doing about that? And when they do 12,000, when they lay off 12,000 people, are they disproportionately laying off people that, oh God, thank God we can get some of these people that we don't want to have in our team off the team, the people that we hired, they're doing a great job, that actually have saved our butts on so many projects, so many different ways. But let's face it, the fewer of those we have around here, the better. And unfortunately, there are at least 11 different categories of those kind of people that we don't want to have around here. So, yeah. And also the fact that it's, I contain multitudes. I can think about many things at the same time, many different aspects of things. Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately.
Yes, exactly. That's why we have anxiety. If we were dopes, we would be so happy right now. But yeah, I can be very, very happy about if this were 100 to 120 years ago, and I were writing about internal combustion engine technology. Okay, I would like to think that I would be really, really excited about the idea of, gee, but okay, if transportation were no longer a horse that can, your own feet that can only take you a short distance from your house, a horse that can only take you a slightly larger distance from your house, or a train, which first you have to get to the train station, and secondly, you have to be able to afford to, if it were something that you could own that could take you within 100 miles of where you are anytime you want, my goodness, that would empower so many people on so many levels. You would no longer have to live within the same community that you work. You would no longer have to, if you sell things, you no longer have to sell things only to the people that you can immediately reach within a day. I would like to think that 1920 version of me would also say, yeah, but it's also going to mean that a lot of people's jobs are going to be impacted. And also, I can't help but see that these are making huge amounts of noise and putting lots and lots of black smoke into the sky. And I wonder if that's going to... I have the same sort of juggling act with AI, where the ability to empower people who are are disadvantaged in terms of where they are in the power structure. AI has a lot of potential to address a lot of things there. However, it is also going to be putting lots of black smoke into the sky. And as in the Stochastic Parrots paper that Timna Gebru, Margaret Mitchell from Google, formerly of Google, who were fired from Google because they're responsible for ethical AI, and other researchers who are interested in ethical AI, as one of the parts of that thing, of that section of that paper, pointed out that it consumes a huge amount of energy, and that it's going to create a whole bunch of pollution and greenhouse gases and speed
all
up
those
global
images
warmer.
You're generating on Gemini, just so you can make a funny little meme.
Yep.
Destroying the planet.
Yep. And the benefits of those features are going to hit huge companies that are worth $1 trillion. It's going to benefit people who are into that, live in economically advantaged industries and areas of the world. However, the disadvantages of global warming are going to hit everybody on the planet, including the billions of people that are never going to see any benefit from AI technology at all. So these are things that this is why I love having you as a partner, because we don't think the same things about everything, but I do think we both take the same sort of broad attitude that I can be very, very pleased that I can now drag a PDF into Gemini and ask, please summarize this and answer questions about it, while also being concerned about, is this not going to be a technology that's available to everybody? Is this only going to be controlled by mm-hmm. power brokers who are also in trillion-dollar organizations? Let's talk about RuPaul. Okay, so yes. Knowing this was going to be heavy.
Speaking of drag.
Yeah. So the video is not up yet, but people have been covering it. So RuPaul's TED Talk was, I don't know if it was a TED Talk, or I guess they have a new sort of format that, in addition to the pacing the stage thoughtfully, holding your palms in front of you and talking in a mesmerizing voice and saying, in 1963, the ability of one goat to feed a village was limited, if not non-existent. What if, instead of using those resources to feed a goat, we were to create a Bitcoin structure that could decentralize. Yeah. Oh, they seem to have a new feature, which is more of a Q&A sort of thing. I don't know whether Google DeepMind CEO was part of that, but it was more of a Q&A sort of thing. But I'm definitely watching that video when it hits. Anyway, so RuPaul's TED Talk was entitled, "What's the Best Way to Slay?"
Yes.
And this is why I love RuPaul. He was asked to describe the importance of drag. And I'm quoting here, "The power of drag is like the Superman suit to Clark Kent. It allows you to expand your idea of who you are, of what you are. It's a very simple trick, and it works." That's great. "Know yourself, mm-hmm. be thyself," he said. "You are the best version of you. You can slay that way." Like, oh, I want that. I want to embroider that on a pillow. That seems like one of those little signs that sometimes like I tack up to the side of the wall.
Yeah, but that's also stuff. Like that's also like 40 years of therapy.
Okay, true.
It's like, I'm starting to realize, Andy, all this stuff is just time. It just takes time to believe in yourself.
Yeah.
That's why it's mostly people over a certain age who are telling us to believe in ourselves.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm being so cynical, but yes.
No,
it's like, because I'm learning it as I'm approaching 40.
Goodness.
So.
I never had like a prejudice against old people. Okay. I really never did. Not even when I was a stinking like 16, 17 year old who thinks that he knows everything and he's got all the solutions that no one else has figured out yet. Okay. But boy, the wisdom you get when you're above 30 and you've just been here long enough that you've seen cycles, you've seen behaviors repeat themselves for good and for bad, and you are more prepared to you're more prepared to not worry quite so, or excuse me, when you worry about things, you have the ability now to worry about them in context. Okay. Where I was pretty upset with a certain former actor, former governor of California who became president. I will not name him or her. Okay. Him, America.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
We can only hope. Okay. But like, oh God, he's an idiot and he's provoking the Russians. And he doesn't seem to care about like sending troops into Afghanistan, doesn't seem to care about the environment. The first thing he's doing is bringing people in. And I'm not, and some years later, certainly today, it's not like I think that, oh, well, there's nothing can be done about that. Oh, let's just accept that. But it's like, okay, these are cycles. There are people who are fighting for that. There are people who are fighting against that. There will be some victories. There will be some failures, but the fight will always go on. And the thing is, people tend not to have the ability to destroy the entire planet. So continue to, like, make yourself a good boxed lunch if you're going out. You know, continue to shave at least 4 times a week. You know, don't say, oh, it just doesn't even matter. I'm Generation X.
You just look better.
Yeah. I'm Generation X. Our commemorative coin says in Latin, I just couldn't care less. Leave me out of it.
I know. I'm married to one.
But you are the best version of you, and you can slay that way. We're going to take a break. I'm going to slay my thirst with some water here, and we'll be right back. Well, we're getting, particularly ever since the first public beta of Android 15 came out, sub note, do not install the beta on any phone you want to work and you rely on. Mm-mm. But particularly since the beta came out for the public, we're seeing a lot of new features that we're going to be expecting when it goes gold in the fall. Obviously, we're now a lot of the editorial decisions for, like, this podcast and other things, or at least for me, they change once you start to get into late April, because now you're so close to Google I/O where you're going to get the official storytelling on Android 15 that it's not as though that's canonical. That's the only thing we should be talking about, which is what Google has to say about it. But it's like, we won't have to speculate. We can now, when they tell the story of, here's what we think the focus is going to be, what is in our minds when we are saying, here's what we want to achieve with Android 15, we don't have to speculate about it. It's going to come soon enough. But there's still a bunch of features that are being sort of discovered that make me think that this is going to be a really good update. This week, a couple of people were reporting on some security and privacy features that made me think, oh boy, I cannot wait to have a phone that does these things. Mm-hmm. For one thing, okay, Google continues to make location services easier to manage. This is not necessarily adding new features to how you manage location features, but essentially learning a lot from user experience and I'll explain to you. You see,
rude.
You see, Google does pay attention to all of its users and how it does things, so that as a result, you're not really using this in a vacuum. So, oh God,
no, you're not. It's listening to you.
This is one thing that I hope that AI can do. Things that it learns from me automatically, not having to set things up. Like, oh, wow, I see on Google Calendar he's got podcast recording. I'm going to assume that if he says, hey, Shlomo, I should actually shut the heck up because I'm not actually doing anything. Continuing. So Google is putting Android 15 is going to have most of the location services features, like, on one settings page where it collects every single one of every single app's locations permissions, like, all in one place. So you can sort of Christmas tree and say off, 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 on, off, off, off. Why did this have to begin with? I forgot to turn this on. Not only that, but according to a couple of people who have taken a look at it, I still don't have the beta, but I don't know about it, going from their description here, that will also show you location access activity in real time, so that if you suspect that an app is hammering location services for some reason or under certain circumstances, you can go into settings, open up location services, and just keep an eye to see what's lighting up here and realize that, okay, great, congratulations, you have just had your permissions revoked because you are abusing them. The same reason why I don't keep cookies inside the house. I've abused the privilege of accessing the cookie jar, and yes, it is an actual cookie jar. and this other feature that I marked out. There are a couple of new settings that will make it more difficult for domestic surveillance operations other people who might be working against your personal best interest to trick your phone into connecting to a bogus cell tower so it can intercept your communications, spy on you, just find out what your location is by your device ID.
People are getting really creative, okay? People are getting really creative. Exactly.
Yeah. And a lot of these have the full backing and financing of a North American government. I won't say it. I will protect your anonymity. So this comes by a new cellular network security settings page. You access it through security and privacy. And essentially, it makes it harder for phones to be tricked into connecting to a cell tower that is not a normal cell tower on your network. So Stingray and other devices that are used by law enforcement, they get your phone to connect to them by providing a much, 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 much stronger signal closer to you than whatever the nearest legitimate cell site is. So your phone mm-hmm. wants to connect to the strongest, the best source possible. So if you are at a political protest, an arts festival, I'm stereotyping here, but every time that I've been at Boston Common when there's the annual like marijuana festival, it has always been like I did not know what was happening. I just knew it from like when I'm in the public garden and I get close enough to the common that it's the weed festival,
like,
isn't
skunks.
It? Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, I think one of the biggest benefits of being high on marijuana is that you're so high you do not realize how rank this pong actually is, how dense it is, how long it sticks around. Those of us who are not partaking don't have that fun. We just say
it's just you saying it that is just making me giggle.
I'm not opposed to it. I don't think people should be going to jail for life or anything they're doing related to marijuana. I don't partake, and I'm not interested in it. I'm just saying, just please, please, please don't sit on a bench at that little park that's across the street from my house and dope up for like 3 hours, because I might be there with my iPad wanting just to read a book and then I have to move on very quickly.
It's like cigarette smoke now in terms of stuff you don't want in the atmosphere.
See, I don't know. I'm old enough to remember like what it was like when people are smoking. I'll say outdoors. When you're outdoors and someone is smoking nearby, you would smell them as they pass by. It would dissipate really, really quickly. And that was it. And also, maybe it's just my age, but there's something about pipe smoke or like cigar smoke that it's not, I mean, it's not given tobacco. Given that it comes and goes really quickly.
Gets a pass.
Oh, well, yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
No, but I don't know. Maybe it's like the oil that in pot smoke that just sticks to something and just will not let go. You cannot evict a pot smell. But anyway, let's say that the law enforcement who just might want to collect a collection of people who are very, very interested in the marijuana and marijuana adjacent activities might want to set up a box that's, again, blasts the air with like cell signals.
Just have a burner, people. If you're going to do anything, just have a burner phone. They're so cheap now.
Well, you know, since it's come up, this is actually one of the reasons why I bought a Walkman like 5 years ago. It was during a previous presidential administration. I will not name which presidential administration it was mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago, but
like count the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 4 or 5 years ago. And I was feeling so like PO'd and angry about how bad things could get if this unnamed president were elected to a second term, that I was making a whole bunch of not dramatic moves, but it was influencing a lot of things. And one of them was when I was interested in, I discovered that Sony was still making Walkmans, but had made some really nice advances in them. Like Apple stopped making the iPods that don't have self, that only play media, but Sony still makes a very nice line of audio only like Walkmans. They're tiny, they're compact. I thought they were nice. One of the things that affected my decision to buy one, the A55, was that, okay, so if I'm like just walking around and like I know there's a protest or something happening, that means that I can turn my phone off completely so that they can't track me and collect me with Stingray, but I can still listen to my music and I'll be sticking it to the man that way. That was not the reason why I bought it, but I thought that it would be nice to know that if I'm ever in situations where I don't want my cell phone to be able to be pinged by a box that I don't know about, it'd be nice to still be able to like listen to my Joe Jackson albums. Okay. So there's the cellular network security settings page has a couple of countermeasures related to that. So Android 15 has new security notifications related to cellular connections. It will warn you if you've got this turned on, if a nearby piece of radio hardware is repeatedly pinging your phone for its identifier. So it will block that and it will let you know what's happening. There's also a brand new setting that basically says do not connect to any cell tower, cell source of any type, unless it's encrypted. And that will force your phone to reject any unsecure connections, which is usually what happens with, again, a box that is not a cell tower. It is either somebody with a backpack with a motorcycle battery in it that's trying to steal information from people, or, again, law enforcement that just wants to build a database, or worse of the three, a marketing company that wants to add to its knowledge database of, here are a list of 1,000 people who attend political protests, and we can cross-reference that with their driving record and their addresses. Yeah, so you should have absolute control over the we have in America, we have the Fifth Amendment. We cannot testify against ourselves against our will. The phone is essentially a violation of our Fifth Amendment on a daily basis, where anybody who passes nearby can collect information from us without our authorization. So the more features like this, and I'm glad to see that this is one of the areas where Apple and Google are sort of in a positive arms race, or actually more of on security and privacy issues, they are actually more on the same team more often than not, I think. Now, more with security than with privacy, to be sure. But when it comes to making a device more secure and making sure that companies, on Apple's case, all companies, in Google's case, all companies except for Google, can't have access to your private information, they tend to like to one-up each other. Apple has done something similar but weaker with the iPhone. Google has now, apparently, up to 15, is going to sort of leapfrog above them. I'm sure that in the chat rooms where all those security researchers hang out, Apple's going to say, yeah, we should do that. And now they're going to win like that argument too. I want to point out that I saw this first on Michal Roz's Twitter feed. He contributes to a whole bunch of different like Android sites. So by the way, it wasn't the public beta. It's not as though he was like tearing apart an APK to look for strings or anything. But nonetheless, I like to say that this wasn't me doggedly Christmas treeing the interface of the beta to make sure that I can dig up everything for everyone. No, so this was, thank you very, very much, Michal. That's why we are in many ways a community. Not enough ways, but in some ways. Okay, well, now, I'm sorry I did liken this story to like a Google war that's come to the shores of the United States of America. That's not... Okay, so what this has to do is that now, internationally, we keep talking about link taxes, where Australia or Canada or France or other countries, they do... link tax is a loaded way of describing this. There is a movement to say that if Google profits from from the digital news industry, the digital journalism industry, by including their content inside Google searches, Facebook by repeating and including news content, they should pay the sources, they should pay that community some fraction of what they're getting from ad revenue from it. I tend to sit on the side of people who think it's a link tax, because these go so far as to say that no, you can't do a Google search that simply quotes a sentence or two from the article but is designed to send you to this independent news site so that you can actually get more traffic for there. I don't think that matches the florid language that lawmakers and the news industry often uses when they're promoting these laws. I don't know if you feel the same way, but
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
Okay, that's an appropriate answer too. Sometimes you don't know, you haven't given it enough thought specifically, or you are wise enough and experienced enough to know that I have an opinion, but I need to check this against a couple of things before I want to express it. And I don't have to express a thought.
Actually, this is kind of bother me a little bit, because I saw the other day so I was on Romanian news, which I kind of go on at the end of the day because it's morning time for them over there, so that's when all the stuff kind of starts to hit. And I saw a TikTok that said, this is what our website looks like. It's from a Romanian press site, and they were like, this is what our website looks like in Canada. And they explained that in Canada, Facebook had to block external sources. And so they were showing a screenshot of what it looks like in Canada's end. And then I saw this news percolating a couple days ago, and I was thinking, oh, that could be really bad for the local indie papers in California. Like, we really rely on these papers to hold the system accountable, because a lot of the big papers aren't allowed to do that. Like the San Francisco Chronicle and the LA Times are great, but you see like under what they're working with, you see that they still have to do like the SEO clickbait to get people to read, that they're still filling out a bottom line versus a small indie paper like Berkeley Side, like a small little, you know, Berkeley independent publisher that just talks about what the rich people in Berkeley are complaining about. Somebody is holding the rich people's feet to the fire, and or a paper that I support, which is the Vallejo Sun, and they hold the Vallejo PD accountable with their reporting, as well as like what goes on in the surrounding small towns. So these are all very important parts of the ecology of media, and for Google to throw a little hissy fit and say like it is like their capitalist right to capitalize on all this, but at the end of the day, that sucks.
Yeah.
Because Google News is, because after they killed Reader, I didn't really have a way to read RSS feeds. So I just went to Google News and I started training Google News on the terminology and all the publications and the sources that I wanted to read. And so I can go to Google News and I'll get, this is what's happening in this small town. This is what's happening in this small town. Here's what's happening in Oakland. Here's what's happening in the little hilly town, in Marin County. I get to see a top-down view of what's going on around me in like my economic environment. And like that's what I want a full picture of. Yeah. I don't want what has been curated for me. So that is how I feel about that.
Yeah. I mean, I love Google News as a product. Because so much of every workday, actually even not workdays, is like, it's not just like I'm going to intentionally develop knowledge, information, sources, stories. I'm sound like I'm a political beat reporter. I'm not, but I'm a tech reporter. But still, part of it is like I'm going to go to this Discord and see what's new. I'm going to go to this research site to see what they're talking about. But a lot of it is I'm on Google News just because I'm there anyway, because it has an entertainment tab.
Right.
So I start my day by getting my morning comics through gocomics.com. Then I go to a website that says snarky things about the day's comic strips, joshreads.com, the comics curmudgeon. Then I go to Google News. I do not read the important headlines of the day. I click on the entertainment tab and find out why everybody's making fun of J-Lo. And then I click back on the other tabs for that top-down view. And especially because I've been using Google News for so long, it is really, really good at surfacing stuff from sources that I have never heard about, like digital journalism sites that I never heard of before.
Smaller blogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. People with independent blogs and independent like commentators. And that's why that colors my view of these link tax sort of places where I can't remember any time where Google has given me an alternative to reading, to going to an actual website and reading an actual article. Quite to the contrary, it has given me just enough of a taste to know that, ooh, this is interesting. I want to follow through on this. And I wind up on the Sacramento Bee or wind up like on a small ice. Sacramento Bee is by no means small, but you know what I'm talking about. A newspaper that's not necessarily on my daily hunt, and in many cases, a source that I'd never even heard of before.
Yeah, Sacramento Bee is a really big paper.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. I was
paper of record. I know, from the capital.
I know. You're absolutely right. And I'm quoting them on two store in two places here.
In fact, I was taught by Sacramento Bee alumni. Anyway,
nice. What I had not correctly articulated was not small newspapers, but newspapers that are not like I know most of the small most of the large and small newspapers in New England. I'm not regularly hitting the Sacramento Bee up for knowledge, so more a deficit of attention as opposed to a deficit of resources.
They don't write about Austin.
So that's why. Also, we should get onto the actual story itself, but just to wrap up, like what I'm thinking about link tax, why I call these things link taxes, is that so many of these laws at the federal level, at the country level, this is not the Lowell Sun saying that, look, we had to fire a whole bunch of reporters, these we no longer have a sports team. We only have one person that can attend city council meetings. Okay. And it's because we're being killed by Google. We need this law. It's News Corp. Okay. Who owns Fox News, owns Wall Street Journal, all these huge, the handful of media conglomerates that own most of the news in the world and want to own it all, that are saying, we want Google and Facebook and everybody to start paying us money so that we can get our bonuses, and we'll continue to like buy up small newspapers and shut them down and just like turn them into basic, like, you know, SEO farms for other content. But we really like to have the government basically open up the tills for, this is why I'm really skeptical about this sort of stuff. But let's get into the reason why. So the reason why we're talking about it right now is that California is considering a brand new link tax bill, a statewide bill. Now, it was introduced last summer. It's called the California Journalism Preservation Act. So hearings on the bill, however, were postponed until this year. The bill sponsor said this was to allow time to, quote, ensure the strongest legislation possible, unquote. Hopefully also to, well, this is the first draft. We need to get a lot of people on board thinking that this is a good idea and that we're serving the needs that we want to address with this thing. All good reasons. But so now it's been reopened for discussion. It's pretty much like the others, we've seen worldwide. It would require major digital platforms, like 50 million users per month, whatever, like Google, to pay California digital journalism providers a percentage of advertising fees that are generated by displaying that content. And this is where I get a little persnickety, because the law would cover all content in all forms, and that includes Google search links. It wasn't a long piece of legislation, thank God. So I downloaded it like tonight and read through it, and it does say explicitly, here's all the stuff that's included, but not limited to. The bill also prohibits Google from, quote, retaliating, unquote, that's the word they use, against any California digital journalism provider by, I'm quoting the bill, quote, refusing to index content or changing the ranking, identification, modification, branding, or placement of the content, unquote. And the entire, I've read the entire text of the law. It's not a long PDF. It doesn't seem to contain anything that would stop any qualifying California journalism provider from just saying that, hey, I wrote an article about I wrote my own article about the budget crisis in DC, and yeah, it was 700 words and pretty much was cribbing everything from the AP wire, and I know nothing about SEO. It's kind of a terrible piece of journalism, but when you search for the budget situation in DC, you don't even find my article, and I insist that Google is suppressing me and is retaliating against me, and I want you to force me to pay for it. Again, I don't think that's the intent of every single person who would file a challenge like this or want to sign up for qualifying. But there's nothing, if you're saying that retaliation is punishable, and you're saying, well, we have to define what retaliation is. I posted something on a WordPress blog whose link I've never made public. Okay. is the fact that you can't find the stuff so a reason for me to get $80 a month from Google? I hope that's not true in California. But now that the bill is back out of cryo sleep, so to speak, Google is doing exactly what it has always done in response to any link tax bill. It is a standard playbook. Jaffer Zaldi, who is a vice president of Google News Partnership, authored a blog post on the official Google blog on Friday, announcing that, quote, to prepare for possible California Journalism Protection Act implications, we are beginning a short-term test. This is always what they do, a short-term test for a small percentage of California users. This testing process involves removing links to California news websites potentially covered by CJPA to measure the impact of the legislation on our product experience. And the post ascribes this move to the lack of clarity on California's regulatory environment, unquote. So essentially, they're like standard playbook. They're saying that, well, We're not shutting down California news sources from Google search yet. However, we're going to see, we're going to be ready to do that on a moment's notice, so that if we decide just because we didn't have our cookie today and our blood sugar is a little low and we're feeling a little ootsy against California, we can just simply flip that switch and be done with it. But of course, as this is part of this, this is the dance. As a result of this, two media industry groups who are lobbying for the law are now accusing Google of violating antitrust laws, both on the state and the federal level. They're urging the California Attorney General. Yeah. They're also urging the FTC and the DOJ to investigate Google about this. Sacramento Bee, there you go, I've been relying on for coverage of this over the past year and a half, but they reached out to Google for a response. They got this one from a spokesperson whose name I did not recognize. Quote, these baseless claims deflect the real issues with CJPA. This bill is unworkable and will hurt small local publishers to benefit large out-of-state hedge funds, unquote. So, yeah, this is, I don't know how this will settle down. This is, I think in most countries, there is some sort of settlement that happens to say that, that Google is not appling this kind of legislation, saying that if you even try this legislation, we will fight it. There is no negotiations. We don't negotiate with such idiots. Google is saying, we will agree to this, but you have to take out some things that we absolutely hate. And of course, a lot of that's going to be things that they hate because it requires them to give out a lot of money to people they don't think they need to pay, as opposed to they shouldn't pay. So we're going to find out about this. I think in Canada, I need to double check, see what's happening in Canada. Canada passed a similar law, and it's a difficult thing to solve because you can't just, that there's a breaking point. Once you say that not only is this too expensive for us to comply with, compliance is in itself very poorly defined, and we don't know how to comply with this in a way that will not expose us to more liability. The easiest thing for us to do is to simply not provide this region with this service, at least until we get some clarity on how we can live and exist with this law correctly. But it's still an ongoing thing. I don't know how this is going to surface. This is also one of the reasons why most of these large companies, they want federal laws on such things, because if they got to do California compliance and Idaho compliance and Oregon compliance and Massachusetts compliance, that's just not possible. And so they would much rather, not only would they, for simplicity's sake, have a federal law about privacy, federal law about tracking, federal law about acquisitions and running an app store.
This is what happens, though.
Yeah.
This is what happens. Like, this is what happens when you don't regulate capitalism.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
everyone. I know I sound like I'm just like an angry little leftist, but you know, folks, sometimes.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it just, you get tired of hearing the same story 20th time.
I just think that there's a right time, and there are times where regulation is appropriate. There are times when regulation is not appropriate, and we need to wrap up the show because we're getting near the end. But there are times when it's like, one of the smartest things that the Obama administration did and the Clinton administration did was to say that, okay, look, the internet has a huge amount of potential here. We have to let it grow without restriction to see whether it flowers, whether it bears fruit, whether it's a weed that needs to be pruned back. But we're not going to see what we need to do about this until we see it and let it grow. And that was 100% appropriate, because one of my first real policy arguments as a young nerd, must have been 12 or 13, where when there was a suggestion that there should be encryption, like on web, not about the web, but I'm still like pretty young. Like this was the infancy of the web, when it was like HTML 1.0, it didn't even have tables, it barely had graphics. And there was some, we want to, as we expand the specification for HTML, we want to have specifications for like connecting to a secure website, an encrypted website. And there's still so many of the hippies, like, and I mean literally, like people who, to be fair, built the internet and built the microprocessor from the 60s and 70s. Yes. But they were very much, no, man, if once we have privacy, once we have the ability to keep secrets, people are going to abuse this to talk about things that should not be a secret. And whereas people who did not grow up under Watergate as a formulative experience as an adult said that it would also mean that like the things I say to people will not be eavesdropped on by people who want to do me harm. Also, a lot of things I think the internet would be good for cannot happen without any, if there's no expectation of privacy whatsoever. So that kind of freedom from lack of thought is important. However, the internet is, there are trillion-dollar companies that are unstoppable at this point based on what they were able to develop on the internet with technology. It is now a time to, in many places, appropriately say that maybe Apple should not be able to tell every single developer and every single user of apps to say, you will do things exactly the way that we tell you to do them, the way that profit us and enhance our business plan. Anything that we don't like, we will be able to shut down and nobody can stop us or tell us to do no. Or Google or Microsoft to say, we want to buy the most valued and important game companies and make them into Microsoft subsidiaries and essentially make it impossible for any independent gamer to do much more than pay their own rent and utilities off of what they make off of a game. We want to make sure that that entire industry belongs to us and pretty much two of our friends that we went to private school with. Okay, that's the sort of stuff where I'm really very much pro regulation, and I'm not, and I acknowledge, particularly with all the stuff that we've been talking about with the Digital Markets Act in the EU, there are going to be some places where it's going to do a little bit of damage, where things are not going to be as safe or secure. They're going to be a little bit more complicated, but it's also, you go to the beach, it's sometimes it's really, really hot, but that's the price that comes with being at the beach and like driving into the ocean and making sandcastles. Like, you can't simply say that unless this is going to be a perfect experience, we are not going to do this at all. So that's pretty much what I think. So we got to wrap up. As always, everybody, we're going to please, help our support our show and everything on the Relay.fm network by becoming a member. Head on over to Relay.fm/material to sign up, gain access to all these members-only stuff, like what we're going to be talking about right after we stop the main recording. Also, if you go to Relay.fm, you'll be able to see like links and show notes, so that stuff that we're talking about, you'll be able to read the source material we were drawing upon. Sometimes it's pretty good stuff. I really wish that week after week, there's things where, oh, I wish we could just go over this paragraph by paragraph, but you can, that shouldn't stop you from going over this on your own paragraph by paragraph. Flo, anything, you've got a whole bunch of new stuff on Gizmodo, like anything specific that you want to point out or anything that you're doing that you want to talk about?
Actually, for folks who are members of the network, I've got an episode this week on Spotlight. Yay. So if you want to hear me chat with our unicorn, go listen.
Lovely. And I was on WGBH just last week, so you can go to wgbhnews.org to hear me talk about, again, excited to have 2 hours worth of material to present during a 20 to 30 minute news segment on NPR. That's always pretty exciting. It's sometimes my speech gets into hummingbird level because I'm so excited, and also I realize that they're not urging me along, but I'm getting the sense that we're getting close to the point where we need to move along, and I've got 8 pages of PDFs that I need to summarize for people. But so sometimes it's fun at my expense, but still a lot of fun. But that's it for this week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to us this time. We hope you're going to be with us again next week, but until then, we hope you have a happy, safe, and very, very healthy 7 days. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.